Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, home of the Indianapolis 500, the greatest spectacle in racing, it's episode 20 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's big deal,
Duel.
We'll take a look at two-player games, some great ones and some not-so-great ones.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Fits!
Will it be a perfect fit for your gaming collection, or simply give you fits?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John, the original and the best. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, coming to you from beautiful springtime in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yep, the engines are running as this weekend, the Indy 500.
That's right, it's a very exciting month in Indianapolis, being race month. I never go to the track. I don't know about you.
I went once when I was in high school, and it was neat to say that I went, but yeah, I probably wouldn't go again.
I think Indianapolis is like one of those cities, just like any other around the country, where whatever the really cool thing is that happens, people who live there never go to it.
Right, right.
You're like, oh wow, you live next to the ocean. Don't you go to the beach all the time? Oh, no, not really. Hmm. So same thing for the Indy 500.
Probably.
But, yeah. But anyway, we've got some very non-Indy 500 related games to talk about today.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking about two-player games. In our big deal segment, because Cody and I are a two-man operation here, this podcast, and so we play a lot of games with just the two of us, and so we want to just go over some great games you can play if you just have one other person with you.
Exactly.
And in our Buy, Try, Deny segment, we're going to be talking about a game that is not exclusively for two players, but can be played with two players, and that is Fits, a new game from Reiner Knizia. And from Ravensburger Games, we'll get into that in just a few minutes.
You know, I had a Ravensburger once. It was one of the best burgers I've ever had.
It was a ravenous burger.
Yeah, there you go.
Very nice. So that's pretty much what we're going to be doing on this show.
that is a very nice outline, yes. How are you? We never talk anymore.
I'm doing good. It's been kind of a busy couple of weeks here since the last episode. I actually have traveled to two different states in the last 2 weeks. I went to Texas for my stepsister's college graduation, and that was an expected trip, and then I actually had an uncle pass away suddenly in Virginia, and so I had to travel there for the funeral, so it was kind of an unexpected trip. But
I haven't traveled.
No?
I've stayed here.
But I still had got a lot of gaming in, so you ready to talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
All right, well, as always, our episode starts off with the Game On Inbox, and that starts
immediately.
It's time for the Game On Inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double click on our inbox and see what we find.
Well, it's the Game On Inbox, a spam-free zone, and we're going to start off, as always, talking about games we've been playing. Cody, what you been playing?
Well, we'll get into it later in the episode, but Kaylin and I took some of your two-player game suggestions, and we played them. I actually,
well done.
Thank you. And that's it. No,
way to not be a jerk to the listeners.
No, I do what I can. I actually bought a Ticket to Ride Switzerland. I got a lot of good feedback on that one, and we both like the Ticket to Ride series, and it's rough.
Really?
It's very cutthroat. I mean, it's a good game. It's meant for 2 to 3 players. We've only played it with 2, but I mean, it gets really rough, and she destroyed me. I mean, wow. It was like 180 to 110 or something. I mean, ooh. I just got killed.
Now, which of the mechanics from the previous games does that have? Does it have like tunnels or ferries or passengers?
It has tunnels, and that's it. It doesn't use stations or passengers or anything.
Okay.
So and it does wild cards in a different way. Like, you can't use locomotives for just any old route. You can only use them for tunnels and things of that nature. So
it's cool.
Interesting, but
it's just a board basically, right?
It's a board and board and cards, yeah,
and cards too.
Yeah, okay. You have to use trains from an existing game. And I guess the hardest thing is finding the cities in Switzerland. Like, even though on the tickets it shows you, you still have to kind of look around because I don't know Switzerland,
right?
But it's neat because they have different country routes, like, because they'll just be a general catch-all thing for Germany or France or Austria, and they have kind of multiple choice routes where it's like you can connect Austria to Italy for, say, 6 points because it's not that hard, or you can connect it to France and get 15 points because that's a lot harder. So it allows you to kind of change your strategy on the fly because it's very easy to get cut off. With only two, I can't imagine with three. I mean, there'd be a fistfight breaking out.
Right. I heard that there's the Nordic country version of the game, mm-hmm. which I think was in pretty limited release. I'm not even sure if you can find it now, but that was a similar sort of a thing where it was real narrow pathways.
That's what I went looking for was Nordic countries, but it wasn't at the not-so-friendly local gaming store here.
Okay.
But Switzerland was, so I got that, and it's good. I enjoy it.
Cool.
We also played... we played a round of Kingsburg, and as I mentioned on the Guild, one of my favorite games, still undefeated. Kaylin was okay on it. It was a little random for her taste.
I don't understand that at all. I mean, I understand you're rolling dice, but...
I can see it. She's more Euro than I am. So
I guess if you consistently roll low every single time in a game, mm-hmm. you'll lose because you won't have as many options. But
that's true.
But that's just unlikely to happen, so...
Well... you can't win them all, huh?
Cody's not going to take a hardline stand against Kaylin on the podcast. And he is a smart man.
It's all right, hon. It's okay. No, it was a good game. She enjoyed it. I mean, she didn't absolutely hate it or anything. She said it was good, just a little too random. But I still like it.
Yeah, what else have you been playing?
We also played Harry's Grand Slam Baseball.
Oh, fantastic game. Covered on episode 18 of the podcast. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I'll go back and listen.
Go have a listen.
Thanks. We played that. We probably played four or five games of that, and I was pretty much thrashed every time.
Oh, what, really?
Yeah.
Really?
It was not a good gaming weekend. She pretty much has my number on games. It's like I won at Kingsburg just because that's the only game I'm good at. But other than that, you know, it was just pretty much across the board sweep.
Now, what did she think? She's a big baseball fan, too. So what did she
think? Well, she likes the Cubs, so I don't know how much she likes to watch baseball.
Hey-o.
Hey!
But what did she think of the gameplay in that game?
Oh, she liked it. Yeah. She liked it, too. Definitely wanted to pick up. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
I also have been playing we reviewed a Savage Worlds and Deadlands a while back, and I've actually gotten to play Savage Worlds for the first time in a game called Sundered Skies.
And you weren't GMing.
I wasn't GMing. I was actually playing.
Did you even know what to do?
it's weird because I still like the game. I don't like it as much after I've played it.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I played it, and I'm like... I was kind of like, this is okay. Maybe it's not as good as I thought. So,
but you've said before that you really seem to enjoy GMing over playing anyway. Right.
I like GM more than I like to play. But yeah, playing it, I was like, it's fun, but it's not quite as good as I remember it.
Now you're gearing up for the beginning of the second leg of a campaign that we did earlier in the year, or actually last year, called the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
So I got an email from Cody with this very nice graphic, because, you know, Mr. Graphic Designer, he has to make it look super cool.
I made the logo for the show.
He did indeed.
That's all I do.
But yeah, we got that coming up too, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it should be fun.
The return of my character Jack Goodnight, the one-armed doctor, doctor missionary scientist guy.
Right. So we'll see what we can do there. What have you been playing, Mr. Richard?
Well, I haven't really been playing hardly anything in the realm of role-playing games lately because I've been, like I said, traveling a lot the last couple of weeks. So I've been playing games with my family. We should probably almost do a whole episode on how to transport your games when you're traveling or gaming on the go. Let's jot that down. Maybe we'll do that in a future.
What's
episode.
This? Let's jot that down. You jot them down.
Get a pen.
I made the logo. I'm done.
But I had a very limited amount of space because I was flying standby to go to Texas for my stepsister's graduation. But my stepmom and my stepsister are both real big into gaming, especially Euro games. And so I wanted to take a couple of games to play with them. And, of course, in a very small space like that, you can't really take the game box. So this was the first time that I actually just took the boards out of the box and I bagged up all the components and I just kind of placed those among my clothes and my suitcase and was able to take both of those games with me.
And it was the best Twilight Imperium game ever.
actually, the two games that I took with me were Keltis, which I mentioned before, also Lost Cities, the board game, and also Pandemic, and had a chance to play in kind of the hotel breakfast room with my stepmom, my stepsister, and my wife, Rachel. The one thing that was really interesting about these games, we've mentioned Pandemic and Keltis before, so I won't go into details about those games. I think they're both very good games. But the interesting thing was we went into this small room and we set up these games and we're starting to play, and all of a sudden we hear some people in the room next to us, some you know, younger folks, a rather large number of them, and you can tell they're starting to talk, and I start overhearing what they're saying, and I realize that they're setting up a game. And I'm like, oh, really? That's kind of surprising. And I look, and they're setting up this enormous game of Roborally.
Huh.
So of all places in Georgetown, Texas, Holiday Inn Express, there's this huge game of, and they look like they're having a great time. So I almost went up and said something to them, but, you know, it would be totally lame. Like, hi, I'm a gaming podcaster. Have my card, you know.
Perfect.
Oh, I don't know. I just I need to work up my confidence level for that. But so that was a lot of fun. And then, actually, when I went to Virginia this past weekend for my uncle's funeral, I stayed with my cousins and had an opportunity, even in the midst of some sort of, you know, sad times, to lighten the mood with some gaming. And I had actually given my cousins three games for Christmas this past year, put together a package, and gave them a copy of Flux, Guillotine, and Perudo, or Liar's Dice. And when I got, this was back in Christmas time, and now when I got there in May here, my cousin told me, we were really glad that you came to visit because we haven't played any of the games that you gave us because they're too complicated. We need you to teach us the rules.
Dear, oh dear.
So that was fine, though. So I had a great opportunity to teach them how to play Guillotine and also how to play Flux. And
Draw one, play one.
And Flux is, you know, a very polarizing game on Board Game Geek, especially as to people either really love it or really hate it. But
how can you hate that game? Come on.
Well, it's just the fact that you don't have much in the way of decisions to make, or you're making decisions, but you don't really know if they have any effect on your ultimate outcome or not.
Well,
you know, trade hands or you know change the rules.
Those people can go away. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. You can go away.
I'm not saying that because I actually do enjoy the game. It's a really nice light game. And actually, my cousin Lauren, who is 12 years old, she really enjoyed the game. And you know, said she wanted to play it again. So, you know, I think it's a good one. It's a good light family game, and it's a good one to pick up. It's inexpensive, which
you know
is
they have nice. I think, and now I'm saying this, I may be proven wrong. I think they have a Flux tournament at Origins.
Really?
Isn't that a weird tournament game? I'm the Flux champion. It's like, what were you, like the eighth person through the door? I mean, like, you might as well randomly pick it that way.
Kind of like the Origins Awards.
Oh, nice.
Thank you very much.
Very nice.
You know, a couple other podcasts that I've listened to recently have mentioned the nominees for the Origins Awards and given their opinions on them.
Sure.
We're not going to do that.
No, we don't care about gaming awards.
We don't really care about gaming awards. And if you want to go and vote for certain games at Origins, feel free.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you should realize that the only real source of gaming information that you need is this podcast.
Of course. So. You know, if the game is fun, then you don't need an award to tell you that.
Absolutely.
The Spiel de Yaris.
So those games I got to play in Virginia Beach. And actually, I also had another cousin of mine who is a it's a big gamer and very much into games like Warhammer, and plays a lot of D&D, and he's into much more heavier gamer games.
Good man.
And so he took me down to his local friendly local gaming store in Virginia Beach called Tower of Games. And it was a real nice little store. It had a pretty good little selection of different kinds of games, and had lots of gaming space too. So, you know, give some love to the local gaming store. I'll link to Tower of Games' website in the show notes. And if you live in the Hampton Roads area in Virginia, then go check it out.
All two of you.
And to my cousin Dan, who might be listening, you already go there, so you don't have to take my recommendation.
Continue
to go there. All right, well, we'll go ahead and move on into gaming news. We have just a couple of pieces of gaming news to pass on to you. The first one is about the game Wits and Wagers from North Star Games, one of our very favorite party games.
Absolutely.
And they have announced that they are going to be releasing Wits and Wagers Expansion Pack 1 in September of 2009.
Finally.
It's coming out in September, but if you happen to frequent the game conventions in the summer, such as Origins and Gen Con, they said that they'll probably have some copies at that time. So we'll.
Or you can buy it for me as a wedding present.
Oh, there you go.
We get married in September. So.
Oh, you know, I can afford that.
Well, not you and I.
No, no. So they said that it's going to be available at Origins, Gen Con, and the World Board Gaming Championships prior to the initial release.
There's World Board Gaming Championships?
Yeah, I think they're like in Pennsylvania or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have to look.
I trust you. You'll have to link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, Cody, maybe you could link to that in the show notes.
Nope.
So the game is going to include 700 new questions on 100 cards, and also is going to include 3 dry erase markers. Because I don't know if this has happened to any of you who own the game, but my dry erase markers about half of
them. I'm down to like four.
Yeah, they've just kind of died on me. So, and actually, Say Anything was worse. I had a couple of those die really quickly on me. So
you can probably buy a lot of those little ones in bulk somewhere, though, I'd bet.
I'll bet you that's what North Star Games is doing. Yeah. So they're going to provide you with three more of those. And the retail price is going to be $15.
Good price.
Yeah. The expansion is also going to include some of these things called personality cards. And they're going to basically feature, I guess, famous game designers and famous gamers. So they're going to have cards featuring Scott Alden, or Aldi, who's the founder of BoardGameGeek.com.
Okay.
Bruno Faiduti and Alan Moon and Richard Borg, who are three pretty famous game designers. And also Ken Jennings, the guy who had that big streak on Jeopardy a few years ago.
If there's not a Kevin Wilson card...
It does not look like there is one to begin with.
Oh, my.
We'll have to write Dominic and ask him to include one. But what these personality cards are going to include is going to have seven of each person's favorite trivia questions. And so that, but it looks like those personality cards are actually only going to be available at the game conventions.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's kind of a little collectible promo thing going on there.
Yeah,
sure.
So I was going to buy it there anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, there
North
you go.
Star Games.
So look for that expansion coming out in September. And then we also have another piece of game news that is coming from our good friends at Fantasy Flight Games.
Sure.
And that is the release of Middle Earth Quest, which is a new adventure game that is based on, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And specifically, it's supposed to be the 17-year period between Bilbo's disappearance and the Ring's departure from the Shire. As described in the book, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Right.
It's for 2 to 4 players ages 13 and up, and one player will take the role of Sauron, and the other players will serve as heroes who must fight to keep Sauron's dark plans from succeeding. So they have to complete quests and enlist the aid of various characters from Middle-earth. Going to be lots of typical Fantasy Flight chrome in this game, plastic figures representing the heroes and minions, over 200 tokens and almost 500 cards.
Didn't they make this game already? Haven't they made this game like 3 times?
Well, not the specific game. I mean, fantasy adventure games, I guess they've made.
No,
they've made
quite Lord of the Rings games. I mean, granted, I've not played any Lord of the Rings games.
All right, well, there's Lord of the Rings, just like the Lord of the Rings cooperative game
by
Kinesia. There's the Lord of the Rings, The Confrontation. Then there's all the expansions that went
Ticket
with
Ticket to Ride, Lord of the Rings edition.
Then they made War of the Ring, which is a 2-player kind of war game about that. But I don't know. I haven't seen anything that's specifically like this. I mean,
it seems like a paycheck game. It seems like I mean.
Well, but the Middle Earth theme and the Lord of the Rings theme. I mean, it's bankable.
Is it still hot? I mean, do people still care? The movies are kind of past. The books really aren't.
I would think so. I want to buy it. Yeah. I'm probably a bad.
You wouldn't buy everything.
I'm a bad gauge for that. But I don't know.
Color me skeptical. I mean, even though it's Fantasy Flight, and my heart is with them. I think a review on iTunes said we're Fantasy Flight game hounds. It was a good review, but they said, even though they're Fantasy Flight game hounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, called us Fantasy Flight game hounds?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's completely correct.
I'll accept that.
Yeah. But I don't know. It just seems like they're just kind of going back to the well again on this one.
I think it's going to be good.
Okay.
Now, one thing that is a little bit of a deterrent, this game is set to come out in the third quarter of 2009. Mm-hmm. Retails for $80.
Oh, dear.
So, I don't know how big
the
box is.
I've heard the board is,
be.
Like, huge, though. It's like a 2-section board and something like a 20-inch by 40-inch.
Oh, damn.
Board, okay. Like this monster. It's probably the whole Middle Earth,
Boy, that's a lot of potential, but it could really.
I'll play
really
it,
stink.
But
Well, it's like World of Warcraft, the adventure game, when that came out. That I know, but that had a lot of potential, and that's why we picked it up. But as you might,
that's why you picked it up.
I know, but as you noticed in a previous episode when we reviewed it, we did not give that one a great review.
Nope.
So stay tuned for that one. Given the fact that it comes out in the third quarter of 2009, makes me think that they will probably have some copies available at Gen Con. I'm just saying, just Fantasy Flight's performance
you've
in the
already,
past.
You've already bought it.
Not if it's $80.
Already bought it.
We'll stay tuned. We'll see.
If Kevin Wilson's selling it, you're buying it.
Quiet, you. All right, well, it's time to get into some emails that we've been receiving from our listeners, and we really do appreciate all the listeners who have given us feedback from our previous episodes. And so we'll start off with this one comment that I got from Michael Jordal Regarding the comment that I made about Heroescape promotional figures.
Very good.
Because I kind of showed my hand there and put my cards on the table that I get the promotional figure at Gen Con and then I sell it on eBay to...
You're a monster.
I don't feel too bad about it, though, because I actually, my cousin that's the gamer in Virginia that I was telling you about, he told me that he purchased some kind of gaming mat for the World of Warcraft trading card game that was an exclusive at Gen Con. And he paid like $75 for it on eBay.
Oh, my.
So I told him, I said, well, then I guess I'm getting all the promotional swag at Gen Con so that I can sell it to people like you who are willing to buy it, to spend that much money on it.
Monsters.
Oh, no. But, you know. But anyway, I told the story about how I had gotten the promotional figure and the teenagers that were standing nearby had kind of cast an eye of disdain upon me for saying that I was going to sell it. So Michael says, I've been into the Heroescape scene at Gen Con since the beginning. And the reason you got those daggers about selling the promotional figure on eBay is because the first couple years they did the promo, you couldn't get them in the tournaments. And many people actually wanted them to play and weren't able to get them at Gen Con because the people that didn't play the game were just, you know, snatching them up mm-hmm. and selling them on eBay. Said it was a pretty hot topic in the community and lots of people are still upset about it.
Michael, I give you the golf clap. Well done.
Oh, you don't stand behind me on the selling on the eBay?
Oh, no. No. And if you listen back, I didn't support you then.
Really?
No. You get the promo figures to play with. Come on.
Okay.
Whatever. It gives a sense of uniqueness to your game. Like, I have the Sir Hawthorne.
That's great and everything, but I'm not a rich man. And even though I live in Indianapolis and I can go to Gen Con for far cheaper than most people, you know, if I can find a way to defray the cost a little bit, it's worth it to me.
What's the most you've gotten from one of those promo figures?
I think I got like $65, $70 for one.
Did that make a big difference?
It paid for my badge.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying.
Fair.
Yeah, okay.
Fair.
All right, well, let's have to agree to disagree on that one.
I'm
partner.
Right.
All right, so Michael, thank you for your comment on that.
Good job, Mike.
And I hope you bear no ill will to me for my habits. I do play the game. I have a huge Heroescape collection, so I'm a homer when it comes to that.
Not a complete Heroescape collection.
I guess I don't have Sir Hawthorne or Master Wen Chu Wu or whatever his name was. So
you're a monster.
Okay. Some other things we got in our Game On inbox is regarding our episode on gaming spaces.
Uh-huh.
We got a very nice email from Justin Moore regarding his gaming space. And he says that he's pretty happy with his gaming room. He says it's one of our house's bedrooms. We got customizable and expandable shelving from IKEA for the games. Now, there is no IKEA real close to Indianapolis.
One in Cincinnati, one in Chicago.
There's one in Cincinnati.
Yeah, they just opened one,
I think. That's really not too far of a drive. But so I guess IKEA is a good place to get inexpensive shelving.
Uh-huh.
I made a tabletop for the room as I couldn't find the table I wanted anywhere. Table is positioned right under the ceiling fan with lights pointed right down at the table. I'm pretty happy with the way it's turned out. We've seated 8 there pretty comfortably. And he mentions that you can see pictures of this in his user gallery on BoardGameGeek, and his username there is Faye.
Well, you need not worry about
that. You don't even need to really do that because, thanks, Cody.
Thank you.
I'm not smart.
Oh,
he posted the pictures of his gaming room in our guild. So in the thread about the last episode, episode 19 on gaming spaces, he has a post
there. It's a cool tabletop.
It's nice. I like the colors, too.
I like the oval.
Yeah.
That's like the perfect. It's perfect for board game. It's good for RPGs.
Because you said you had some problems with the two-player games with the...
Yeah, because, I mean, if you have a perfectly round table, like a 5-foot round table, you know, it's like Kayla and I would sit next to each other, and we'd have to have Kingsburg at kind of this weird, like the board at this weird angle, and I don't know. And you can't really play across from each other because it's too far apart. You know,
right.
So we may just end up playing two-player games at like the kitchen table or something, but...
Maybe that Middle-earth Quest game with the giant board would fit very nicely.
Hey, why don't you sell a promotional figure and then you can buy me a copy?
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
All right,
get a hold of your life.
Goodness gracious. So you have to go check out the pictures that Justin posted on our guild. Very, very nice stuff. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. And also in the inbox, we received a lot of good feedback on two-player games. I had solicited you, the listeners, feedback on games that would be good for my fiancé and I, as we play a lot of two-player games and didn't really have a lot in the collection. And We got so many good responses, we're actually going to be talking about most of them in the Big Deal segment.
That's right. If you guys haven't figured that out yet, the solicitation of those answers have led to a whole episode on two-player games.
You fell into my trap, inadvertently.
Yes. We got not only good responses in the inbox, but in our guild, too, we have a whole thread of people who have put some two-player games out there.
So. Now, if we were to ask another leading question that may be used in a future episode, what kind of question would we ask?
Well, just to kind of force our hand a little bit, we'll go ahead and let you in on a little bit of our topic for the next episode. Our next episode of the show, we're going to be talking about ways to enhance your games, and that could be anything from sleeving your cards to, you know, painting your figures or whatever. So we're going to be talking about all the different ways that you can do that and maybe some innovative ideas you might be able to try at home. So we want to pose this question to you so that you can be a part of our show in next episode's Big Deal. The question is, what things have you done to enhance your gaming experience? What modifications have you made to a game of any kind, really, that have made your gaming experience better on a particular game?
And you can reach us, of course, at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
So send all of your information there, and we will use most of it in the next episode.
That's right. And so a lot of the folks, you guys who have written in about the two-player games, then we're going to be talking about the stuff that you said as well. So I think that about wraps it up for the Game On Inbox. And it's time to get into our Big Deal on two-player games entitled
Duel.
And now it's time for the Big Deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal?
Welcome to the Big Deal. This episode, we're talking about two-player games. Games you only play with one other person.
Very good.
Is that a good definition of two-player games for you?
That's the best definition I could have come up with.
Okay. And we wanted to talk about this because, well, for one thing, Cody is in a situation where the main person that he plays games with is either me.
Either.
Or his fiance, Kaylin. And yet you have a gaming group, right, as well?
Yeah, but they hate board games.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that's bad news.
they like two kinds of RPGs, and that's about it.
Okay, so as far as things like that goes, we're really the main folks you'd play board games with.
Yep.
And then for me, Cody's the main person I play games with.
Oh, thanks,
buddy. And occasionally my wife, if she's in the right gaming mood, which is not too often,
ooh,
but she... The nighttime is the nighttime.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Oh, dear.
So we're going to talk about three categories of two-player games today. We felt like we could sort of divide most two-player games up into one of these three categories, and that is games that are just for two players... Mm-hmm. Games that are for two or more players, but play pretty well with two. And then games that are for two or more players, but play really poorly with two.
Right.
And so we just kind of go down the list here of some games that we like. And we're also going to incorporate some of the comments that you listeners have made for two-player games. And hopefully by the end of this, if you're looking for good two-player games, you'll have a nice broad list to go off of as things you can make purchases with.
We can only hope.
Yep. So let's start off with games that are just for two players that are good. Now, what are some of the things that make a two-player game really good as opposed to a game that would use multiple more players?
To me, I think there has to be a fair amount of interaction. It doesn't have to be a completely interactive thing, but I think, especially with two, I think you really need to play off that other player just a little bit. I know we'll probably get in this later, you know, Dominion, you know, yes, that would work well with two, but maybe that doesn't have the interaction I'm looking for. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think it really needs to play off the other player, and also needs to not... You can play a heavy two-player game, But I think heavier games, I'm talking the really heavy stuff, works better with multiple players. I think you can really get bogged down when there's only two of you playing a pretty thick game.
Well, I'm not sure if I agree 100% with that, but I do. Oh, Cody's walked out of the room now.
Done.
But I do agree that sometimes it's difficult to find an opponent who's willing to sit down and play a 4 or 5 hour
right.
heavy
now, if you can find them, then God love you.
Yeah, man. And I'm sure that there's probably a lot of you out there that do have either a spouse or a friend that, you know, you guys have been playing for a long time and you don't mind digging into a really meaty one. That's not really so much my experience. I tend to, you know, Cody and I get sick of each other after about
wow.
an hour and a half.
Right? I don't get sick of you, but game on with Cody.
Okay, there we go. So what, Cody, and what will be on your list of games that are just for two players that are outstanding, that you would put at like the top of your list for if people were looking for only two-player games?
Mr. Jack is very high up there. We had a lot of listeners suggest that on the Guild and through the email. I really like it. I think it's got some really good mechanics, and it just really shines as a two-player game. I would also say, and this is one you introduced me to, Cold War, KGB versus CIA.
Mm, yeah.
Nice little semi-light card game, but a heck of a lot of fun. One I usually want to play more than once when we do break it out.
That one is actually also on my list of great two-player games. And it's a fantastic game with a lot of tension to it. It's in a real small box, and but yeah, what you're talking about interaction and about mm-hmm. what you do directly, it's like, you know, sort of a tit for tat, almost like a chess sort of a thing. I guess that's why chess is a pretty good two-player game.
Except I'm bad at it, so it's a horrible two-player game.
Me too. All right, so what else?
Well, of course, Harry's Grand Slam Baseball. Not, I think we've mentioned it in like three episodes
now.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. A good light one, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good light one.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned HeroScape.
I'm getting there. I mean, HeroScape's still a weird one with me. It's like I don't think of it immediately as a board game where technically it is, you know. But yeah, if you have two players that like the minis, the kind of miniature gaming, then HeroScape absolutely is up there.
Yeah. And I would say that the just miniatures games in general, which are primarily played as two-player games, mm-hmm. Work pretty well if you like that style of gaming.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of tension between the players. But a lot of times those require just a lot more investment of time and money.
Now, I'd mention the any of the Command and Colors games, even though they technically say you can go, you know, 2 to 4, you could have two people on a team or whatever. To me, they're two-player
games.
Yeah,
those are pretty much just two-player
games.
And
any of those are top-notch. I just don't really have many people to play them with. It's like, for some reason, we never really play them, but we both like them. So draw from that what you will. What's your list, John?
All right, well, as far as just two-player games, my very favorite two-player game is 1960, The Making of the President, which I know is not one of Cody's favorite games.
That's why you never find anyone to play it with.
It's true. I haven't played it in a really long time because of that. My wife really likes to play. I just haven't had a chance to bring it out. But this is a great tense game, and it's sort of medium to heavy. I guess probably medium weight game. It takes a couple hours to play, where you're playing out the events of the 1960 presidential election between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. And I think it's just great. It's card driven. There's a lot of back and forth on the board of, you know, you take over one state and then they take it back from you. And I
do like that. And the cards are really good in that one too. Just how it mimics, you know, kind of real events that happened during the campaign.
Yeah, it's really well thought out, yeah. I think. And the artwork is beautiful in the game. So sure. So that's my favorite one. That is kind of a heavier game. Like Cody said, Cold War KGB versus CIA is an outstanding two-player game with sort of a blackjack mechanic and a sort of a push-your-luck element to that. That's a lot of fun. And the Commands and Colors series, Battle Lore, Memoir 44, Commands and Colors Ancients, I think these are also very, very good two-player games that don't play very long. And I think that Cody touched on something there where he's talking about how you don't want something that's going to be super heavy or super long. If you were looking for something that's super heavy, super long, I think that the game War of the Ring, about the Tolkien universe, is a really, really good game. It's very, very deep and very detailed, but it's very, very well designed. I'm going to say very a few more times.
Very, very,
very
well done.
Verily, verily. But that's an outstanding one. So those would be some ones that I would suggest. And, you know, these are, I was thinking of more, I guess, meatier games. There are a ton of just light card games, I guess, that you could get that are two-player games. But, you know, that's what I would go with. So the second category we want to talk about is games that are for two or more players, but that play really well with two. And what are some that you can think of in that category, Cody?
We had a few listeners mention this, and some people really agree or disagree on this. I think one of my all-time favorite games, Fury of Dracula, actually plays really well with two players. Now, you need at least the person playing the hunters, because they're controlling all four hunters, needs to be pretty familiar with the game. But I think Fury of Dracula with two players, especially on the hunter side, you're not openly discussing strategy. You know, in a normal four-player game, you got to say, okay, hey, I'm going to Paris. Hey, I'm going here, you know. With a two-player game, it can really be this kind of test of wills where, you know, the one person is just, they have all their four hunters and they know what they're doing, but they don't have to vocalize it.
Right, right.
And I think you can really, you can get a really good back-and-forth dynamic with
probably
that
makes it harder for Dracula, though.
Yeah, I think so. Like, when I've played, because, you know, I like playing Dracula, when I play against four other people, I mean, I think it's easy because you can sit there, you can listen to what they're saying, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, well, I just won't go there, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they're way off. But if you're just playing one, it's kind of like, well, what are you thinking over there, you know?
Well, kind of along those same lines and that sort of horror theme, I guess. I think that the game Last Night on Earth with by Flying Frog Productions is a really good game that's for multiple players but plays really well with two. When you're playing with two players, one player plays all of the zombies and the other player, much like Fury of Dracula, controls four of the hero players. And I think that's it's a little bit lighter than Fury of Dracula, but it's a terrifically fun game. And Cody and I have had some really good two-player games of that. We should actually pull that one out and play it some more.
We should.
So that's another good one.
I've got another one.
Go for it.
I would say, I mentioned this earlier in the show with Ticket to Ride Switzerland, but I would say any of the Ticket to Ride series is actually pretty good with even two. I mean, you may not get some of the player interaction. I see you shaking your head over there.
Yeah, no.
I think they work fine.
Yeah, it's okay. I just think that with, like you were saying, with the Ticket to Ride Switzerland and the Nordic Countries version that are made for 2 to 3 players, that tension is sort of built in where you have to block and you have to get around people blocking you. I just sort of found that when you play regular Ticket to Ride, like the American version with two players, there's not usually a whole lot of blocking going on. Mm. It just sort of just becomes a race for who can get the most points, and you aren't as hindered as much. And so
it's still fun.
But I wouldn't pick it as high on the highest on my list. Well. But it's, you know, yeah, I guess they're decent.
Fine.
Okay. Another one that's on my list is the game Descent, which is one of my very favorite games. And I think that that's a longer game, but plays very well with two. With two, you'll have one player playing the Overlord, and the other player will control two or more characters. If you're playing with the Road to Legend expansion, then actually the second player would need to control four because it's designed for an Overlord plus four players. But Cody and I have played some two-player games of Descent that I think have been pretty decent.
I would disagree with you. I mean, our games were decent, but I do not think it's a good two-player.
You didn't like the games we played?
You did a great job, buddy. No, I do not think it works well with two players. No. I think it's heavier than Fury of Dracula, and if you have to control four heroes with all the gear and everything that Descent kind of requires, I think it's just too heavy for two.
Just kind of a slog of
everything. And if you're the Overlord, yeah, it's not that bad, but if you're the player, I think it gets kind of just really...
See, that's interesting, because I sort of feel that way about Fury of Dracula. When I'm the four hunters, and each one has like a hand of three or four cards, that's just a real pain in the butt for me. Hmm. So, to each their own.
Indeed.
Yeah, listeners, you decide.
Right. Pick me.
Go ahead, Cody. Oh, I thought you said pick me.
No, I was imploring the listeners to pick me in the argument.
Okay, yeah. As far as more games that are... two or more players, but play really well with two. Some of our listeners have mentioned games such as Runebound, which I think is a good choice because I don't
better
think
than Descent.
Well,
for two,
I don't think that the game Runebound plays very well with much more than two. Actually, I think it just gets way too long because there's not very much player interaction in that game at all. Others have mentioned Race for the Galaxy.
Not played it.
I've played once. I actually don't really like that game at all, but I know it's really, really popular, sort of card game, resource management sort of a game. So that's one. And actually, one of our listeners, Jerry Stovall, mentioned that his sister and her husband love the two-player version of Bonanza.
Oh.
And he also said that, just in case you've never played it, his whole family loves cribbage.
Okay.
Which actually was one of my dad's very favorite two-player games. He played that with my grandfather for hours. So,
oh, wow.
I actually have a cribbage set, but I've only played it once or twice, so maybe Cody and you and I can pull that out.
Maybe. And I've played Bonanza once or twice, and I hate it.
Really?
I know a lot of people really like it, and no.
And I've never played the two-player version of it. I think the minimum I play that with is four players. I would need to check that one out, because I think one of the big strong points of Bonanza is that it's a negotiation trading sort of a game, and it would be kind of like trying to play Settlers of Catan with two players.
That's horrible.
Yeah. It's,
hey, you want to trade?
Nope. Okay. Yeah. Roll the dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, thanks for those emails and suggestions for games there.
We had some other ones before you get into the third category.
Yeah, sorry. Uh-huh.
A lot of people suggested the Catan card game.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of people mentioned it. I've not played it.
Neither have I.
You haven't played it.
Well, I haven't played it. I actually gave it as a gift because it had been recommended so many times.
Right.
And my stepmom who got the game, she says it was a ton of fun.
And I've heard very polarizing things. Like, I've heard some people just really hate it, but then some people just swear by it as a two-player game.
Isn't that funny how in gaming that seems to be the way it is? It's always like, you don't have too many games where people are like, it's either I love this game or I hate this game.
Yeah, I think some are more polarizing than others,
no,
but
that's true.
That'll be one to try. And then Hive was mentioned quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
You've played it.
I have.
You didn't like it, if I remember right.
And the reason why I didn't like it is just because I am just not a fan of abstract strategy games. I recognize that chess is a good game,
mm-hmm.
like it's a well-designed game, but I just don't like it. And, you know, for me, we've talked before about theme being important, and it's pretty important for me too, even if it's a dry theme. But I hesitate to say this because in our Buy, Try, or Deny segment, we're going to be talking about basically an abstract strategy game.
A different sort.
Okay, well, we'll get into that. But I just don't really like those sorts of games. So Hive really plays a lot like chess because each of the tiles has a picture of a different kind of bug on it. And each bug has a particular way that it can move around the board. So your goal in the game is you're trying to surround your opponent's queen bee
mm-hmm.
with tiles by using the movement mechanics of each of the kind of pieces that you have.
Yeah.
And it's got nice little components to it. It's got these real chunky bake-like tiles.
Yeah, I've seen those. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty nice. And it's nice and portable, I guess. You could throw them in like a cloth bag or something.
It might be worth trying.
Yeah, yeah, we could put that in there. And that would be one that's just for two players.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also gotten some suggestions. Our listener Toby Otero mentioned games like Mr. Jack. You mentioned that. I mentioned Yinch, which is a abstract strategy game in the GIPF series.
Okay. Now you're just making up games over there.
we're probably not going to cover any of those games, but if you're interested in the GIPF series, the most recent episode of The Spiel actually talks about the entire GIPF project. And so you should go and check that out if you're interested in those games. He likes Wasabi for two players. Have you played that yet?
Nope.
Okay. Well,
you own it. I'm looking at it right there.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to pull that out sometime, but it's that is pretty good for two. He mentions Thebes, Pillars of the Earth. He also says that the two-player version of Bonanza is pretty fun.
Oh, those are Pillars of the Earth, Stone Age. Those are good two players that are meant for more as well.
Yeah.
I'm glad you just brought that email up.
Look at this huge list we're coming up with.
I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think in general, most games that say they're for two or more players tend to be pretty good. I don't think there's... Well, and we're going to get into this now. Games that say that they're for two or more players, but when you play the two-player game, it just kind of falls flat.
Descent.
Okay, so for you, Descent is one of those.
Talisman's another one for me.
Really?
Because
we played two-player games of Talisman, too.
I know we have. Talisman's...
I don't know you anymore.
Talisman's almost kind of like the opposite of Descent. It's kind of so light that I think... With only two people, it gets very boring. Like, what I like about Talisman is you have four or five people. They're all going for the center. They're kind of, maybe they're screwing someone this turn, maybe they're not, you know. Mm-hmm. With two players, it's just like,
eh. Okay.
I think you need a lot of the player interaction there to give that game a little spice.
Okay. So another game in the category of two or more player games that aren't very good with two. First one I thought of was Power Grid. Now, Cody would say...
It doesn't work well with anyone.
It doesn't work well with any of them, yes. But I love Power Grid, especially with the full complement of six players. I think it's really one of the best designed games that I own. And it's always a very good, intense game. I love the
I don't know you anymore.
You have always known that I like this game.
Ugh.
It's a great mix of negotiation. The auction mechanic for picking the power plants is fantastic. The resource mechanic is extremely innovative, how it's on the board there. And as things as you take resources, they become more scarce, and therefore the price drives up. It's a hoot. But the two-player game, terrible. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the same reason I don't really like Ticket to Ride with two players, and that's because you don't have as much competition for those spaces. So it's not, it doesn't hurt as much to build on particular particular cities. So that's one that I thought of. Puerto Rico is another one, I think, that's not very good with two players.
It's not good with three or four players. you're just giving me lobs here. And I'm
really
knocking them out of the park.
I know, I'm really dipping into the those games that he doesn't like with any number of players. And then most recently, a game that we've played that's a cooperative game that is supposed to be for 2 to 4 players, and that's Ghost Stories. I've played a four-player game of that I thought was really fantastic. And then Cody and I played a two-player game, and it just looks like the game is designed for four players. And if you don't have those other four players, you're having to create these, you know, mechanics that are very different from the original game to be able to make it work. That, to me, may be the earmark of a game that's not going to be real good for two, is when you have to completely change the rules to, you know, be able to make it work. Like, oh, if you've got two, then you need to add this extra board, or you need to have this dead hand or something, or this extra character on the board that does nothing. I don't really like that mechanic.
I'll kind of disagree with you, because I'll go back to Kingsburg.
Oh, okay. I figured you probably would.
That's probably an exception
in my book, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, that you pretty much have, you know, dead hands. You know, you roll 3 dice and fill that spot. You roll 2 dice and fill another one. I think that's a really good way to do it. I mean, it's a very kind of just very light addition to the game, but it kind of simulates that competition feel. But Ghost Stories, I would agree with you. I mean, that game, you have to go through this elaborate song and dance to really kind of equip it for two players versus, you know, just kind of doing a few extra things.
Right. Now, what about in the area of role-playing games? We want to be all-encompassing for in different kinds of games. Are there any role-playing games that work good with two players, as we would call that?
Lone wolfing.
Lone wolfing.
That's copyright Fear the Boot, I
think.
That's
right, yeah. Fear the Boot comment there.
Are there any RPGs that work well with two players?
And no. The answer, okay, if the answer is no, then that...
I don't. I mean, some people... I actually know quite a bit of people that they do... almost went to a weird place. It's like I almost said a husband and wife, but you know, I do know people that lone wolf, so to speak, you know, where it's one DM, one player. I can't get behind that. Not for me.
Have you ever seen the Fear of Girls video?
Oh yeah,
it's kind of like that. Yeah, two guys.
We'll link to that on the show notes. Definitely. If you haven't seen it, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
But yeah, I think it just gets into weird territory, and yeah, not for me.
Mm, okay. Yeah. Well, I would agree with that too. That I've never really played in a two-player situation, but I can't see that it would really make any sense.
Yeah.
All right, but I wanted to mention the role-playing games. You
sure,
know, so
yeah.
Be all encompassing.
In a horrible throwaway context. Thanks, I appreciate that.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, I hope that this has this little, you know, random discussion.
It's the big deal.
Yeah, it's the big deal. It is a big deal. That if you're looking for good two-player games that in this rapid-fire sort of way that we've thrown out a lot of these different games, you'll maybe give them a try. We'll try to link to as many of these as possible in the show notes and where you can pick these up if you're interested.
Now, to leave the listeners with something, because we've talked about a lot of games. A
lot of games, yeah.
If you have to recommend one game for two players, what do you recommend?
1960, Making of the President.
Okay, and I will recommend Mr. Jack.
Okay.
So there you go. So if you do nothing else, at least try Mr. Jack.
And 1960, Making of the President.
Again, Mr. Jack.
Okay. Well, I guess that wraps up our big deal for this episode. Right?
I concur, yes.
Okay, let's move on to our Buy, Try, Deny segment. We're going to take a look at a game that is from two or more players but can be played with two, and that is
Fitz.
Buy, Try, or Deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started.
Well, it is time for Buy, Try, or Deny, and we've got a game from the good doctor, Mr. Dr. Reiner Knizia, who is known for his in-depth themes and how they really interact with the games he creates, right?
Absolutely. Really one of the most... Are you kidding
no,
me?
No, no. Reiner Knizia, an amazing game designer, but probably the worst, felon when it comes to tacked on themes.
Yep.
Because some of them are bad. I mean, like, take a game like Battleline, amazing game. Horribly tacked on theme, Blue Moon City, Lost Cities, you name it. But this one is a little different, where it's kind of hard to tack on a theme when the game is basically Tetris. So we have Fits by Reiner Knizia, and John, as always, is going to give you the rules rundown.
Okay, here we go. Fits was designed by Reiner Knizia, came out this year and is published by Ravensburger Games, and it is for 2 to 4 players. You know, actually, the box says that it's for 1 to 4 players. I guess you probably could play it with one.
Yeah.
You'd just be basically looking to see...
And then you can cry yourself to sleep.
How high of a score you could get. So this game is, just as Cody was saying, it's basically Tetris the board game.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a very, very heavy multiplayer solitaire element to it. So I'll just go ahead and say that up front. But let's just start off by talking about the components of the game. Very nice components in the box. You're going to... get these four, the best way to describe it is they're four ramps. They're these little elevated ramps, and they have a little storage
compartment. As opposed to a flat ramp.
Boy, you're really picking
I'm
on
sorry.
Me tonight. Jeez.
Elevated ramp.
It's been a long week.
I know.
Elevated ramps, and there's some storage inside that will hold all the different pieces. And so you're going to get all these little chunky pieces. If you've ever played Blockus, they're a little bit thicker than those pieces,
yeah.
And they're in, you know, four different colors for the four players. You're going to get all different shapes, and they're going to be the very typical Tetris shapes that you're used to if you've ever played the Tetris video game.
Yeah, the components, very good. I mean, when you open the boxes, everything just is so contained in the little elevated ramps. That
Yep, and then the ramp itself has like a plastic sleeve that goes over top of it, like a cover. And then there's these four cardboard templates that go inside of the ramp that will have a grid of dots on them that will be sort of your playing surface for the different games. And there are four rounds in the game, and so there's a big 1, 2, 3, and 4 on each of these grids to indicate which one you're supposed to be using. So there's four of those setups for each of the players, and then you're just going to basically get a deck of these square cards. There are four cards to indicate your starting piece, and then there's a stack of cards that have all of the other pieces on them. And so here's kind of how the game is going to work. You're going to start off by dealing everyone one of these starting piece cards. And you're going to set up your little ramp where you have the number one board showing. And then you're going to put the little plastic thing over top of it. And the plastic cover thing has these grooves in it, these like raised plastic grooves that will help to guide your pieces down to the bottom. Again, think of Tetris when you're thinking of this game, that your pieces are going to be sliding down from the top to the bottom of your board and are going to rest at the bottom, depending on, you know, they're going to either sit on top of a piece or sit on the bottom of the board. So you're going to get your starting piece card, which will indicate the first piece you're supposed to play. This is the only thing that is going to be different for each player. Each player will start with a different starting piece, and they'll place it at the very top of their ramp and then slide it all the way down. Unlike Tetris, once you slid it down from the very top, you cannot move it from left to right at all. And so it's, you know, so it has to go immediately vertically down to the very bottom of the board. So everybody's going to place their first piece, and then you're going to start turning over these cards, and it'll be almost like calling out a bingo number. You know, you'll turn over the card, and everyone will find that particular piece, and then you'll place it on your board in that same manner. And so you'll just continue to turn over these cards and place your pieces. Now, what's the point of doing this? Well, there's four different rounds, and there's four different ways to score each round. So in the very first round, the way the scoring works is that you'll get 1 point for every row that you've completed that has no empty holes in it. So in that way, it is kind of like Tetris. That's very much like Tetris because, you know, you'd complete the row and it would disappear. So you're going to get 1 point for each of those rows. And then you're going to get -1 point for every dot that's uncovered. And so you'll score that first round, then you'll pull all your pieces off, and you're going to repeat this again for rounds 2, 3, and 4.
But it gets a little harder.
Gets a little bit harder when you get to the later rounds. Round 2, the board has the grid of dots, but it also, in random spots, is going to have little circles with numbers on them, 1, 2, or 3. And so the way that the second round is scored is that you will get the point value that's on the little circles, for every circle that's uncovered. So every special circle that has a number in it that is uncovered at the end, you're going to get those points. If they get covered up, you don't get those points. And in addition to that, you'll get -1 point for every normal dot that is uncovered.
That's where it gets you.
Yep. Because one thing to mention is that when a card is turned over, you have the option of not playing that piece if you don't want to. But you'll never get to play it in that round again, so you would just set it aside. That might be good if you're in a tight spot and you're not getting the piece that you want, but you have to keep in mind that you're throwing away the possibility of covering up those dots that would get you the negative points. So that's round 2, is you want to leave those special scoring dots uncovered. For round 3, you'll repeat this again, and for round 3, you're going to have not only circles with positive numbers, but you're also going to have circles with negative numbers, and it'll say like -5 on them. And so you want to try to uncover the ones with the positive numbers and then cover up the ones with the negative numbers. So you have two things you're trying to do, and you're trying to cover up those regular dots because you get -1 point for those. So that's probably maybe the most complicated scoring, because then when you go to the fourth round, it's a very interesting sort of situation where you're going to have pairs of dots on the board that have different symbols on them, like a blue star or an orange triangle or something like that. So there's two of each of those. And so you're trying to leave the pairs of those uncovered. If you have like both of the blue stars are uncovered at the end of your round, then you're going to get 3 points for that. If you have one of those blue stars covered and one uncovered, then that's -3 points. But then if they're both covered, then that's going to be 0 points. So neither good nor bad. So you have to sort of decide which ones are you going to try to leave uncovered and which ones you're going to try to definitely cover up so that you don't get the negative points. And again, you get -1 point for each of those normal dots that gets uncovered. So you do that. You play four rounds of Tetris like that, but with different scoring conditions. Then you add up your score, and whoever has the highest
score. What was our final score? I mean, it was embarrassing.
It was like I had like 10 and you had like -2? -2 or something like that.
Only the best for you, the listeners.
Yeah, well, we played with a rule wrong at the beginning because we didn't take into account that it was negative points for each of those normal dots, and that makes the game completely different because since you get to set aside the pieces if you don't want to play them, it's like if there's no penalty for the normal dots, then you could just say I'm just not going to play any pieces, and oh, look, I get all my positive points. So it gives you that incentive for trying to play and fill up your board. So that is Fitz, and we played this as a 2-player game. I think we're probably going to pull this out pretty soon and play it as a 3 or 4-player game because it scales really well, I think, because, you know, it's basically multiplayer solitaire. Everybody's kind of doing their own thing, but there's lots of other games that do that as well. So that's Fitz, and I'll go ahead and just ask you, Cody, what did you think of Fitz?
I thought it was good. It was a little different than once we started playing it, because I thought it was just going to be like this very easy Tetris thing. And I was like, come on, you know?
Right.
But there was some really good strategy as far as once you get into those later rounds. And I find the third round the most challenging. I find it more challenging than the fourth one when you're matching the shapes. But just You know, it's like in my efforts to kind of trap that three and make sure it's uncovered, I would leave, you know, like five dots.
Yeah, well, I did the same
uncovered,
thing.
You know, and I ended up losing points. And there's actually a lot of a deep strategy. And I really like the idea that once you put the piece kind of down and start moving it down on the track, you can't move it left or right. So you've got to, you can kind of see how it fits, but once you do something, you you pretty much have to commit. So
and you got kind of messed up by that one time, right?
Oh, yeah.
You thought it was going to fit a certain way, and then it didn't.
Completely screwed me up. So
So I think that's one thing that I like about it, too, is that fact that you can't move from side to side, so you really have to gauge it from the very top. And that might be even harder in the first part of the game because you have a longer distance to travel to get your piece down. What do you think of the component quality? I think it's really nice components.
I think that's what really shines. Like I mentioned earlier, just how they store everything in the elevated ramp, as you called it. I think that is really neat. I mean, that's it, everything comes apart nicely, good quality components, and I think it'd be really hard to lose the pieces just because everything fits in there perfectly, and it's actually some of the better components I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I think I unfortunately did not look this up ahead of time. I think the game retails for $30 or $35. It's not like a full $40 or $50 that you would see. So I think it's a pretty reasonable price for a game that you're not going to find in Walmart.
Right.
Because I guess in some respects it has some similar qualities to like Sorry Sliders, because it has those real bright colors. It has like a real bright red and bright yellow, and the pieces are nice and chunky. One thing I really like about this game is that it's real easy to teach. I mean, this was one of my shortest rules explanations, and I still was able to drag it out for a while. Yeah, but I think that you can pull any non-gamer, really anybody who's ever picked up a Game Boy and played Tetris, which is most people our age, or younger, and maybe even older, should be able to pick this game up really, really quickly. And since it has that familiar element, something that they can latch onto, I think non-gamers or real casual gamers would be able to enjoy this game quite a bit.
I concur.
All right, so let's just throw it down. Cody Fitz, buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me.
Okay.
I may invoke the Jones theory here, so you might not.
Okay.
You may not agree. It's a fun game. I enjoyed playing it, and I think some people may like it better than Blockus or similar games. I prefer Blockus to this.
Okay.
To me, I think that's the better game. There's room for both. I think they have enough differences in them, but it's something I think you should try. I think some gamers may play it and get very very turned off by it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a decent strategy game. I just think you can do better with the Blockus series of games. And it surprises me that this is a Reiner Knizia game. It doesn't seem like his normal joint,
No, it doesn't really feel like something that he would do,
But
his style.
It's a solid game. I definitely would say give it a whirl. See if it's the game for you. But for me, there are other games in that kind of category that I would pick. Even Ubongo, I think, would... I mean, it's a little more different, but I still think that fits the mold a little better. So a solid try for me for Fitz. And we hand it to you, Mr. John. Richard, Mr. John.
Mr. Jack.
Mr. John. Fitz, buy, try, or deny?
I'm going to go ahead and give this game a buy.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's probably because I maybe feel a little differently about it than you do. I think it's probably, in my opinion, more similar to Ubongo than it is to Blockus. Because I guess I see the block, even the pieces are the same sort of shapes. I really see Blockus as being a little bit more of a back and forth strategy sort of a game. And this one, because it's sort of a multiplayer solitaire idea, it feels different enough to me. And Ubongo is a game where you are doing the same thing at the same time, but you're working on your own little puzzle. And that's sort of the way I see Fitz as well.
Good point.
But I mean, if we were going to invoke the Jones theory regarding games like that, I would list Ubongo higher than Fitz. But since I do not subscribe to the Jones theory of one game per genre, for those of you who don't know the Jones theory, it's Cody's theory that you should really
Shaky theory.
It's some sinking sand here, but that you should only have one game of each particular type in your collection. There's no reason to have more than one. So I would put Fitz a little bit lower than Ubongo, but it's still a solid buy. And for me, the reason why it's a solid buy is because you can really get non-gamers into this game. I think if this is something you can bring to your family party, or that you can take to just a group of casual friends who are used to playing gestures and catchphrase and that kind of stuff, pull this out. They'll want to play it, and you know, at least get a couple of good games of it in. And I don't think anybody's going to say that sucked.
Yeah.
So it's a buy for me and a try for Cody.
Yep.
So overall, a positive review for Fitz.
Yeah.
Well, I think it just about wraps up this episode of Game On.
Let's close it out.
With Cody and John.
Yeah, that's us.
The original and the best.
Except no substitutes.
Yeah.
Before we get into our usual rundown of things, you can now reach us on Twitter if you're a twit
You can tweet us.
You can tweet us.
Whatever that is.
Yep.
You can have your thoughts twoted.
You're such a nerd.
I don't know anything about Twitter.
Just look us up under Game On Podcast, all one word, on Twitter, and you can follow us and get all the latest Game On news delivered right to your tweet.
That just sounds wrong. I don't know.
Thank you. I don't think you deliver to a tweet, but
we're hip.
What
are some other ways that they can reach us?
Well, of course, you can reach us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's the best way to email us with any thoughts about the show, any feedback, or just casual chatter you might want to engage us in.
Yeah, and don't forget about the question that we asked earlier in this episode about what are some ways that you have enhanced your game, be it in a minor way or in a major overhaul sort of a way, because we're going to be talking about that in our next episode about, you know, pimping games, I guess.
Whoa.
Like Pimp My Ride kind of thing, you know.
Yo, dog.
No. So another way that you can get a hold of us is by checking out our website at gameonpodcast.com. That's where you can find this episode and all of our previous episodes. You'll also notice on the right side of the screen a couple of things. One, our donation button, which we love it when that gets clicked.
Absolutely.
And, you know, our bandwidth fees went up this past couple of weeks.
Thanks,
Lipson. So we really appreciate that. So we appreciate any donations you can throw at us to help us to keep things going. And actually, you know, we've got some big changes coming in the next couple of months to the podcast, and so we really do need your support. We'll start to slowly reveal those things as time goes on. But
absolutely, and everything that is donated does go right back to you, the listeners.
100% back to content for the show for you, the listener. We also, on that side of the screen next to the donation button, you'll notice that there's an icon for the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Game On is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network, which includes such great podcasts as Fear the Boot, Pulp Gamer Out of Character, the Myriad Games Podcast, which is a friendly professional gaming store in, I think it's in Salem, New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
And so they have a great show as well, and as well as the D6 Generation.
As well as many others.
And many, many others. But we invite you to go and check out those shows as well, because when you check out those shows, and you know, if you check out those shows and you check them out because you listen to us, let those guys on those shows know.
Absolutely.
That's how you found their show. That would be great, because we're kind of all in this together in the podcasting field.
Yep.
All right, well, I think that's about wraps this one up. What do you
think? I think so.
All right, well, let's get out of here. And until next time,
game on.
On this episode's Big Deal,
Duel.
We'll take a look at two-player games. Games that you play with two players.
What?
I don't free flow like you do. Stu, Charlie, Gold, Peter, Cross, Rock, 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 Rock